On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Former Massachusetts Governor Republican Mitt Romney formally throws his hat in the ring for the presidency today. Romney comes to the contest as successful businessman, state leader, increasingly conservative politician who saved the 2002 Winter Olympics, and as a Mormon. He's hardly the first Mormon political leader or presidential candidate. Orrin Hatch ran, so did Mitt Romney's own father. But Mitt Romney is running hard to be the favored candidate of the religious right. Decades ago, John F. Kennedy drew an absolute line between Catholic Church and state. Can Mormon Mitt Romney do the same in today's political climate? Up next on Point, candidate Romney, the American voter, faith and Mormonism. Joining me first today from Salt Lake City, Utah, is NPR correspondent Howard Berkus. He's been filing stories about the Mormon faith for 25 years. He was also up most of the night last night covering the mall shooting in Salt Lake City. Howard, thanks very much for being with us.
It's good to be with you, Tom.
First, just on the shooting, 5 dead is the latest we hear in a shopping mall. What happened?
6 dead, including the shooter, a young man who has not been identified, and we don't know a motive, but who walked into the Trolley Square shopping mall on the edge of the downtown area of Salt Lake City around dinner time last night, opened fire with a shotgun, randomly shooting 5 people. He himself was killed in a shootout with police. 4 people were seriously injured, and they're in hospitals right now.
So a tough scene in the shopping mall there in Utah. But you're also at ground zero of the Mormon faith in this country, Howard, and you followed it for many years. Mitt Romney announcing his candidacy for the White House today, a strong conservative courting conservative voters and religious voters in particular, though at the same time we see American polls of Americans showing it's all over the place, but maybe 40% expressing some unease about voting for a Mormon. You've talked with Mitt Romney and the Romney campaign about this. How does he see his Mormon faith fitting into his presidential campaign?
Actually, let me be clear about this. I tried to talk to Mitt Romney about his faith, and I was not granted an interview on that subject specifically. But he has been asked about it by plenty of reporters, and he's asked about it on the campaign trail by voters as well. And he, of course, faces a difficult task here. He wants to emphasize his faith and the fact that he is a person of faith and that he operates from a framework of faith. That's something that he needs to do in order to appeal to conservative, religious conservative voters in the Republican Party. Mm. But he also is a member of the Mormon faith, and there are religious conservatives in the Republican Party who are who don't believe that Mormons are Christians. This is true for evangelicals, Southern Baptists. There are entire books written about Mormon theology not being consistent with Christian theology. And, of course, Mormons say that that's not true. But so as Mitt Romney emphasizes his faith, he has to deal with the problem that he has of being Mormon and of some Christian conservatives not believing that Mormons are Christians.
6 million Mormons in this country now, and of course it is a proselytizing faith. That number grows. Mormons living, thriving lives very often within that faith. How do you interpret the polls? This isn't just fundamentalist Christians who get polled. What do the polls look like as far as you follow them, Howard, on how American voters at large think about a Mormon candidacy?
Well, this is very interesting because we looked at polls going back 6 months or so, a variety of polls, and in one, a Los Angeles Times poll, 14% of the people surveyed said they would be not inclined to vote for a Mormon for president. In another poll, more than 50% of the people surveyed said they would be uncomfortable voting for a Mormon for president. But, you know, we have to be careful, very careful about these polls because it's early. Mm-hmm. There aren't many people who, first of all, know who Mitt Romney is or that he's even running for president. He doesn't score high on the visibility ratings at the moment, and who don't necessarily connect him with the notion of a Mormon candidate. And I think certainly that as Mitt Romney becomes more visible and becomes more known for what he actually stands for, the positions that he comes out with, that connection to him as a Mormon may diminish. And if you asked people the question, would you be inclined or disinclined to vote for a Mormon, and then you ask them, would you be inclined or disinclined to vote for Mitt Romney, you might get two completely different answers.
Howard, let's listen to just a little bit more of Mitt Romney's speech this morning in Dearborn, Michigan. He did not dwell on religion. The word Mormon never passed his lips. But faith for Romney today was mainly about good government.
We've lost faith in government, and not in just one party, and not in just one house, but in government. We're weary of the bickering and the bombast. We're fatigued by the posturing and self-promotion. For even as America faces a new generation of challenges, the halls of government are clogged with petty politics and stuffed with peddlers of influence.
And let's listen to a little more of Romney announcing again his candidacy today for the White House in Dearborn, Michigan. As you'll hear Howard, he hews pretty closely to the social values that evangelical Christians hold dear.
It's been said that a person is defined by what he loves and by what he believes and by what he dreams. I love America, and I believe in the people of America. I believe in God, and I believe that every person in this great country and every person on this great planet is a child of God. I believe that we're all sisters and brothers. I believe that the family is the foundation of America and that it needs to be protected and strengthened. I believe in the sanctity of human life. I believe that people and their elected representatives should make the laws, not unelected judges.
God, family, and the sanctity of human life from Mitt Romney there as he announced formally his candidacy for the presidency this morning. Howard Berkus, NPR correspondent, is with us from Salt Lake City, Utah. We're joined as well right now from Hanover, New Hampshire, by Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jack, that's a pretty red, white, and blue all-American speech. How do you see Mitt Romney's religious faith playing in here? Will Mitt Romney, the conservative, just overwhelm the question of Mitt Romney as a religious figure?
Well, he has some trouble with his past, not scandal, but rather his political positions, running against Ted Kennedy unsuccessfully for Senate in 1994 and then running successfully for governor in 2002. He took positions that are now, at least with some voters in some strata of the electorate, coming back to haunt him. He gave interviews with a gay rights paper, very favorable to gay rights. In fact, at one point he said, I'll be a better advocate for such things than Senator Kennedy. This was before gay marriage was an issue. This had to do with civil rights. And he was a pro-choice candidate, albeit with some qualifications, when he ran for governor of Massachusetts. And he said that he would make no friends among the NRA, the National Rifle Association, because he was in favor of some kind of gun control. And these statements are now coming back. Some of them are on YouTube. They've been shown around. And the Boston Globe even ran a column, tongue-in-cheek, calling Romney versus Romney, Romney the moderate versus Romney today the conservative. So I think that is a stumbling block for him, at least with this Christian conservative constituency.
Anyone can shift positions on politics, and of course many politicians have over the years. What about the particular case of his Mormon faith? Does it matter to Americans today? Decades ago, JFK felt obliged to stand up and speak very specifically about his Roman Catholic faith and what he called the absolute line he would draw between church and state. Is Romney going to be called upon to do something similar, Jack?
People are urging him to say something similar, to say some version of what John Kennedy said, which was, I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic Party's candidate for president, who happens also to be a Catholic. And, when Kennedy made that statement about the separation of church and state is absolute, he went on to say what he meant. He said he believed in an America where no Catholic prelate would tell the president, should he be Catholic, how to act, and no Protestant ministers would tell his parishioners for whom to vote. You know, I think that still remains. Americans don't want that. Candidates now are much more open about their faith. But what Kennedy said about religious authorities reaching in to tell the president what to do. I think I don't think Americans want that, and I think Romney will say he does not believe in it either. Even though the Mormon faith does have a president, he is open to revelation, and he can tell the faithful what they should or should not believe. But I think Romney will say with Kennedy, no, he can't tell me what to do as president.
Let's listen back for just a moment here to 1960. John F. Kennedy was running for president. He was met with suspicion by many Americans because of his Roman Catholic faith. He tackled the issue head-on in a speech to the Greater Houston Ministerial Association.
I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic Party's candidate for president, who happens also to be a Catholic. I do not speak for my church on public matters. And the church does not speak for me. Whatever issue may come before me as president, if I should be elected, on birth control, divorce, censorship, gambling, or any other subject, I will make my decision in accordance with these views, in accordance with what my conscience tells me to be in the national interest, and without regard to outside religious pressure or dictates. And no power or threat of punishment could cause me to decide otherwise.
John F. Kennedy, Roman Catholic, running for the presidency in 1960, 2007. Mitt Romney, Mormon, is doing the same. Kennedy won. We'll see how Romney's faith factors into this campaign in an era when faith is much more central to our national conversation. I've been joined by Howard Berkus. He's NPR correspondent in Salt Lake City, Utah. Jack Beatty is here. I want to welcome some more guests as well. From New York first, Richard Bushman is with us. He's Emeritus Professor of History at Columbia University, author of the just-published Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling, a Cultural Biography of Mormonism's Founder. He's himself a practicing Mormon. Richard Bushman, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Happy to be here.
Also with us from Washington, Reverend Robert Schenck. He's president of Faith and Action, a Christian public policy organization in Washington, D.C., president of the National Clergy Council, minister in the Evangelical Church Alliance. He and other evangelical leaders will be meeting with Mitt Romney later this week to discuss his faith and his candidacy. Reverend Schenck, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Let's go to you first, if we may, Reverend Schenck. Here's Mitt Romney, conservative, more conservative now than ever, very open to religious faith and the religious right in his campaigning, but a Mormon. How do you look at that as a Christian evangelical leader?
Well, the evangelicals I keep company with all agree that there is no theological test for the office of the presidency or any other elected office for that matter. I think we'd love to have one of our own there, as we feel we do now, but that doesn't always work out well. And a lot of us learned that, including yours truly, when we voted for Jimmy Carter. So that isn't always the sure test that we're going to get what we want or need. I think what matters in the end is whether Mitt Romney's internal principles are compatible with ours, that is, moral and social principles, and that they eventually work their way out into public policy that we want to see in the country for the betterment of the country. So that, in the end, will be the true test, although I will say that behind the scenes, there is a lot of discussion of Mitt Romney's Mormon faith. And on one committee that I serve on, it's split about even. About half of these evangelical leaders are dead set against voting for a Mormon. And the other feel that it's irrelevant, provided his policies are correct.
When you sit down with Mitt Romney later this week, you've talked with him already, but when you sit down with him this week with his candidacy formally announced, what are the most important deep questions on your mind?
Well, if you're asking deep questions, one very deep question at the top of our list will actually be how Mitt Romney views us, because the Mormon Church has its peculiar teachings on those who are outside the church and regarding their salvation and their status as believers.
Those teachings that they will not achieve salvation unless they accept Mormonism, I guess.
Well, I'm not an expert on it. You know, I know what I was taught in seminary and what I've heard from Mormon colleagues, and you have Richard Bushman
in that case. But there's a question there, and what else?
Well, we're going to ask him the hard questions on the big issues for us, which are the sanctity of human life, the sanctity of marriage and the family, and the public acknowledgement of God. And we're not so much interested in his present positions, because so far they seem to line up with our own, and they're going to be made known and be very public. But how he arrives at those conclusions, what was his journey, his pilgrimage from one position to another? We're going to be looking at that, and we'd like him to tell us about his faith, his personal faith, and, for example, when he says, as he has publicly, that Jesus Christ is his Lord and Savior. We'd like him to define that for us, because internally, within our churches, this is a big question. It will continue to be a big question, and our people are looking to us for answers. What does Mitt Romney's Mormonism mean? And we will have to answer that question.
Richard Bushman in New York, we want to get into some of the nuances here, but we'd be grateful if you'd be good enough just on these big questions to begin with, to give us in a nutshell the sort of origins of Mormonism, and I mean nutshell, and what Mormons believe on their own or in contrast to mainstream Christianity.
Well, Mormonism is unusual in that it did take its immediate roots in the United States with less than 200 years ago, with revelations of the prophet Joseph Smith. The church was organized in 1830 in New York State, and then migrated, sort of forced by circumstances, to gradually westward, and finally settled in Utah. At least the main branch of the church settled in Utah, where the headquarters is still located in Salt Lake City. For the first century, Mormons gathered out of the world into this central location, what they spoke of as Zion. But in the 20th century, it's been the reverse. Mormons have been urged to stay wherever they're converted, in Japan or Africa or wherever. And Mormons as a whole have sort of dispersed out of their central enclave in the Great Basin and are now scattered all over the country and all over the world.
And as for Mormon beliefs, 6 million Mormons in America now, as I understand it, but they saw that the teachings of Joseph Smith, who himself, if I've got the history right, ran for president, of course, ultimately was assassinated, but they saw authentic Christianity as being restored by Mormonism. What's the story that Mormons find in Christianity that's not there in mainstream churches?
Well, Mormonism calls itself a biblical religion, though, of course, we differ in detail with lots of other Christian churches. But what I think Joseph Smith felt was essentially lacking in other churches was the continuation of biblical revelation. I think most Christians nowadays think the Bible contains the revelation, and Mormons don't feel that way. They feel like the Bible is an ongoing process and that God's people need to be led by a prophet in every time in the world's history.
And the connection of the Mormon faith to the actual geography of North America. Could you explain that for us? I believe Mormons believe that Jesus visited or lived in North America at some time after the crucifixion.
The Book of Mormon, which was Joseph Smith's opening offering to the world, this translation of an ancient record, talks about the coming of Israelites to the Western Hemisphere, establishing a civilization here, which was eventually eradicated, and had prophets and a visit from Christ somewhere in the Western Hemisphere. We really don't know where, shortly after his resurrection. So it is unusual in moving the center of biblical history out of Jerusalem, where, of course, the Bible is centered, into America, where the Book of Mormon is written. I mean, we believe the Bible entirely and accept that entire Middle Eastern history of religion, but there is this American dimension that's added by the Book of Mormon.
Howard Berkus, we've seen plenty of American politicians, Mo Udall, Mitt Romney's own father, Harry Reid, the Democratic head of the Senate right now, Orrin Hatch, very active in American politics. Has religion tended to be an issue for these men or a personal affair?
Well, the way that religion intersects with politics here in Utah and on the national scene with the prominent Mormons who've been elected to offices, to the U.S. Senate, to national offices, is really in one way, I suppose. Two ways. One is there's the framework that a person brings to their office that is based in part on their faith, on their religious faith. And secondly, there have been times when Mormon leaders have decided to take a stand on a moral issue of one sort or another. They're very clear about not taking stands on political issues, not getting involved in politics, not endorsing politicians, telling members that they must vote their own conscience. There are moral issues like abortion, like gay marriage, like gambling, that the church will take a stance on, the Equal Rights Amendment back in the 70s. And when that happens, the church has not been shy about calling elected Mormons who are elected to office and saying, this is what our position is. In some cases, they have called and said, they've asked members of Congress to help them with pieces of legislation that either support a position the church is taking on a moral issue or support an issue that somehow that helps the church in some way. They've not been shy about that. But I have to say there's also a history of Mormon politicians doing whatever their own conscience tells them and ignoring what church leaders want. And there's a history of Mormons in Utah not voting the way that the church has asked them to vote on some issues. There's a big difference when the church tells academics, for example, you must toe our line, academics who work at Brigham Young University, or intellectuals in the church, and they publicly disagree, they get communicated, they get fired. But they're really, I don't know of any instance in which a politician has been punished in some way, losing their church position in some way because of disagreeing with the church, and plenty of politicians have, including Mitt Romney.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jack Beatty, you've been following a debate that our guest Richard Bushman has been having in the pages of The New Republic with Damon Linker about Mormonism. What are the concerns Linker's putting forward?
Well, as I get it, his concern is with the openness of the Mormon faith. As Professor Bushman says, the prophetic phase of Mormonism is not of religion is not over for Mormons. They're open to revelation, and indeed, one of these revelations, as recently as the late 1970s, liberalized the church substantially by allowing black members, black church officials, and so on, that was
1978.
That was a revelation, and I think that the New Republic author was saying, well, what if there's a revelation from the Mormon God to the president of the religion, and that revelation is something that we have, you know, something out of the, that a change that would go to the president, a Mormon president, how would that affect him if the revelation were something entirely unexpected? In other words, who would be the higher authority there? Whereas with other religions, the revelations are over. You know what the doctrine is. Here this is a religion that's still open. And should that, and is that something we should be concerned
Reverend
about?
Robert Schenck, is that an issue of concern to you, a faith where prophecy and revelation are still active?
Well, I think the question will be, again, as has already been discussed, how the authorities of the church may or may not influence Mitt Romney in office. And certainly there's a history here because he's been the governor of a state, and we can examine that. We're going to ask some hard questions about that. And we plan to. In fact, Mitt Romney will need to reassure over and over again both the evangelical as well as, I think, the more conservative Protestant church leaders who are going to be discussing this at length with their own people, he will have to get used to reassuring over and over again that, in fact, will not take his cues from the church president or any other authorities. So that's going to have to be a part of his strategy. And we mean at the end of this week to open up a very frank, very candid conversation with him about that.
Right now, we've got a lot of callers who want in here. Dale is calling from Cheshire, Connecticut. Hi, Dale. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to talk about the this notion of the ability of a Mormon to separate the church from state. I spent 4 years with my family in Idaho Falls, Idaho, and I was raised Catholic, but now I consider myself a secular progressive. And it was interesting there, when I was raised Catholic, if you wanted to go for Catholic education, you went to the church, and that was on your own time. Mormons don't view it that way. Mormons actually have the junior highs, the public school junior highs, actually have a period for seminary class for Mormon training. Our sons, not wanting to become bishops in the Mormon faith, were told, well, you can study something else, and but it's clear you're ostracized. The other kids are all, and this is on public taxpayer time.
In a heavily Mormon part of the country, so the line between church and state there, Dale?
Is non-existent. From somebody who sees it as a non-Mormon, you look at and you say to yourself, "Well, our school shouldn't have that kind of proselytizing going on inside the school. This shouldn't be sanctioned at the public school system. That there is this dominant faith, and that's the faith that your children should be taught."
Do you worry about it at the national level, where the Mormon faith is not dominant, where Mitt Romney will serve with people of all kinds of faiths, would serve in Washington, where he says, "Look, I subscribe to Abraham Lincoln's point of view. You take the oath of office; your responsibility is to the nation." Do you doubt that in this candidate?
Yeah, I do, because I think actions speak louder than words, and I think that whenever those choices can be made, it seems to me that the choices are made the other way, and I think it would be tough for someone who's experienced that, as in my case, to be able to in the ballot box say, well, no, what I've experienced firsthand isn't what's going to happen. What this guy promised me is what's going to happen.
Dale, we've got your view, and we appreciate it. Let me get one more call here from Providence, Rhode Island. Jim is on the line. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to mention, I think Mitt Romney will do much better if he plays down the fact that he's a Mormon and doesn't even really mention it unless asked about it. My brother converted to Mormonism when he moved to Utah to get his PhD degree, and I know that him and I have a better relationship when we're just, brother to brother than when he decides to start talking to me about whether or not I might consider going to his church.
All kinds of families can get in a twist over religion. Does the fact that he's now a Mormon make that more difficult?
No, absolutely not. But we found, and I spoke to him, I spoke to my brother about it, and we talked that, that I'm not interested in joining the Mormon faith, and he accepted that, and now we get along like we used to. But when he started to talk to me about possibly wanting to join, it kind of put a damper on our relationship. And I think that, it might have worked for Kennedy to come out and to speak and say all those things that he mentioned about church and the separation. But I think if Mitt Romney begins to come out and mention those things, the same way I don't agree when George Bush starts to come on TV and starts to talk about God, I think you're pushing people away that way.
Jim, thanks for your call. Howard Berkus, you've lived in Mormon country for a long time. We've got a caller here raising issues about the separation of church and state as practiced in the Intermountain West there. What can you tell us?
Well, I want to say one thing about the caller from Idaho talked about this notion of a seminary program within the school. In Utah, at least, seminary classes are not held within the school, but students are released from school time to attend seminary classes outside the school. There's typically at every high school in Utah across the street or adjacent to the building is another building where Mormon students go and take seminary classes. And I've heard, as the caller said, that church and state can mix. It's especially true, I think, in the smaller places. There are communities here, for example, that after the president of the Mormon Church said, please don't hold public recreation activities on Monday evenings because Monday for Mormons is family home evening. We want Mormons to be together with their families. Public officials in some communities then banned public activities, recreational activities on Monday nights. And occasionally the church, as I said earlier, will make a position known on an issue that's before the legislature that has to do with a moral issue of some sort. And the legislature in Utah at least generally follows suit, although sometimes they haven't. So there is that mix of church and state. It's felt especially keenly by non-Mormons in Utah and in surrounding states where there are large Mormon populations.
Of course, Utah and Salt Lake City, a different scene from Washington, D.C. Let's get a call from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just find this very interesting. Everyone's going to have a different opinion, but I am a member of the Mormon Church.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a seminary teacher, though I teach early morning. My students come at 6 o'clock in the morning so that they don't have to worry about missing any school.
Okay.
But my point is regarding separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
In the church, from early on, all of our children and in all of our adult classes, we teach the separation of church and state. We make it very clear that, of course, we believe in this country as a great country founded under God. We believe in the Constitution as being an inspired document, and we believe in God. But we also believe that everyone has the right to worship God according to the dictates of their own conscience. And because of that, we believe that anyone who is elected to office should be able to serve in that regardless of their religion, including Mormons, but certainly also including Baptists and Methodists and Evangelicals and Muslims and Jews and anyone else. And we would fight for that right, just as we would hope that our right to have members of our church respected as well.
So there's a Mormon voice from Iowa saying bravo to church and state, and it's what you teach, Susan. Robert Schenck, with all that, we've had a Catholic president in John F. Kennedy. Would you look at the Mormon faith in the same way we might look at the Catholic faith today? There is a hierarchy. There is authority within that faith, but it has there's been a Catholic president, and we're sort of past it when it comes to Catholics.
Yes, and in fact, I've made that very argument among my fellow evangelicals. And going back to the caller who expressed concern about this in the first place, I have to say evangelicals have similar concerns. We have the same concerns with the indoctrination into secular humanism and Darwinism in our schools. So whether it's religious or whether it's distinctly non-religious, we have those same concerns. But I had an interesting conversation with a colleague of mine with whom I serve on a board, and he is the pastor of a burgeoning evangelical church in the Salt Lake City area. In fact, he's in the shadow of two temples, the Salt Lake Temple and the Bountiful Temple.
Mm.
And he told me that for over 20 years, he has had a wonderful working and cooperative relationship with the overwhelming majority Mormon population there, that he has always felt respected, treated very well. And in fact, they have a very large Christian, evangelical Christian school there. And now a very good number, he said, approaching a majority number of their students are Mormon. So it's very possible for evangelicals and Mormons to get along very well, and that's something that we'll be exploring with Mitt Romney.
Mm. Let's go to Columbia, South Carolina, and Pete. Hi, Pete. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm not sure about the political ramifications. I just wanted to maybe suggest that the Mormon Church is basically a cult. It's maybe a socially acceptable cult, maybe like Amway or something like that. It's kind of like a pyramid scheme. I was in the church for 15 years, and I'm now out of it. I wasn't another religion before, but
why do you say cult? That's a tough word.
I know it is a tough word, but they do accept that they have the absolute truth, which is one of the definitions of a cult, and they also say that they are perfect, that they are a perfect church, and that they have the absolute truth, and which, you know, it does dominate many aspects of a person's life, and it makes it tough for the members, as maybe some of you guests have already pointed out. I don't know exactly how it plays out with politically, but I do know a lot of for the size of this religion, there is a lot of people in public life, a lot of people out there in political positions that are making decisions out there that are members of this church. So they do have quite a bit of influence behind the scenes from what I've seen. And for better or for worse, I'm not saying that this would play out in the, if Mitt Romney became president.
Yeah, Pete, we've got your perspective, and we appreciate your chiming in. Richard Bushman, what about this word cult? The Southern Baptist Convention puts Mormon in the category of, was it cult, new religion, and so on. How do you look at that as a Mormon and a scholar?
Well, Mormons don't think of themselves as a cult. They think of themselves as a church. The specific that Pete mentioned is this belief in absolute truth. And that's a tricky question for all the revealed religions. Mm-hmm. Do evangelical Christians believe in the absolute truth of the Bible, or Muslims of the absolute truth of Quran? I think Mormons do believe that as God reveals these things to them, they have to hold to them and make them the very core and center of their lives. So in a sense, they're absolute. But we also know that in the give and take of reality, that there are many ways of understanding Scripture. There are many ways of living it. And that I think our general feeling is that there are terrific people in every religion who have the Spirit of the Lord guiding them, even if they're not Mormons, and don't believe it exactly the way we do. So my experience in Mormonism is that the word absolute truth, while you hear it sometimes, it doesn't really work out as a very powerful force in shaping our attitudes towards other people.
Let's take a call from Las Vegas, Nevada. Jefferson, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
So I grew up in Utah, and I actually became an elder in the LDS Church, was married in the temple. I'm no longer in the church. I just have to take some exception with two quick things.
Yes.
In Salt Lake City right now, the church has purchased public land and has made church rules as to what you can do on these streets. These are streets in the middle of downtown Salt Lake. It wasn't like that when I was growing up, but that's pretty disconcerting. And part of that,
rules like what, Jefferson?
Like you can't smoke on that street.
I see.
There's a dress code on that street.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. Like those used to be public streets.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the bigger problem, the bigger difference between Kennedy and Romney is that Catholics aren't told you have to go out and spread this word. It's not, you're not called constantly to missionary work.
Though the call to evangelism you can certainly find in the New Testament of the Bible.
You can, but not the way that it is in the LDS faith.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand there's a lot of good intent. It's about saving your brethren, but it can only go so far.
But Mitt Romney was a missionary himself years ago in France. Are you suggesting that as president of the United States he would still have that evangelical dictate?
I think that it would show up in many things when you're making when they're making laws about things that kind of cross that border between faith. And I think what would happen is that urge to be the LDS missionary, because it doesn't end just when you come back from your mission. It's constant. You're always a missionary. And it's good intent again, but how do you make a law or sign a bill into law, or how do you deploy troops to a region without considering that in your life, in your blood, there is that I need to save these souls?
Mm. Jefferson, thanks very much for calling in from Las Vegas. Jack Beatty, the politics are interesting here as we look at the other Republican candidates. John McCain has had his certainly tensions with the religious right. Rudy Giuliani on the cultural values front has had points of difference. It could well be, and evangelicals are saying that that Romney's just his conservatism may in the end be enough compared to his competitors within the party.
That's very true, and I think this is the kind of thing that the Reverend Schenck and others are going to be trying to find out about him. But I think we're going to hear more about this evangelical part of
the proselytizing
of Mormonism, and I suspect that is going to get some kind of attention. I'm curious what you think about that, Reverend Schenck.
Well, actually, I think Mormons should welcome the opportunity for this examination, because part of what I think has not served the Mormon church well is the mysterious part of it, the secretive part of it. We know there are temple rituals and so forth that are not open to the outside world and that cause a lot of suspicion and, I imagine, unwarranted concerns. At the same time, we do have a track record here. We can look at Mitt Romney. He has been the chief executive of a government, a large government, that is the state of Massachusetts, and see how he conducted himself in office with regard to this and other concerns. So we're going to be looking at that, looking at his track record. Jesus said to us, you will know a man by his fruit, by the product of his life. So we're going to look at his life, both personally and publicly. And if it comes out right on the bottom line, then he may indeed be someone we can support.
His life, belief, and politics in America today. Reverend Robert Schenck, we're out of time here, but we appreciate your being with us. President of Faith and Action, based in Washington. Reverend Schenck, thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Richard Bushman at Columbia University, author of Joseph Smith. Thank you very much, Professor Bushman, for your insights today.
I've enjoyed it.
Howard Berkus, NPR correspondent in Salt Lake City, up half the night, but with us anyway. Howard, we're grateful to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Jack Beattie, always great to have you. Thanks for being here, Jack.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.